We've been talking about the Mishnah Nir Aleph. We've been discussing the idea of shutfiyos, partnership relationships. The overall theme for today's discussion and last shir's discussion is about this complex type of ownership between the two shutfin. We'll get into that a little more deeper today. And relatedly, the contest of rights between the two different stakeholder owners of a shutfus, right? Sometimes that can be between two individuals. One person wants to split it in half, the other one doesn't. Sometimes that could be between an individual shutuf and the rest of the partnership. Like, you could have 10 partners, 9 want one thing and 1 wants the other way. So how do we adjudicate the division of rights between those various owners, stakeholders? Okay, so two related questions. Now, I just added one thing to the source sheet on page 1. We spoke about in cases where there's a shutfus, and it's ein bo kedei chaluka, right? So there's no way to neatly divide the asset between the two. So the Mishnah said that neither could compel a division, a dissolution, unless shnehem rotzin, right? Unless both parties want it, right? And that seems obvious, right? Since when are we ever more makbid than the parties themselves, right? So why would you think that shnehem rotzin in such a case that they wouldn't be able to cut up the davar shein bo kedei chaluka, right? So you have a chaser, it's dalet al dalet, you have a parking lot, you have a parking spot that could only fit one car. If they want to split the parking lot in half physically so that each of them can only put half their car in there, right, fine, right? They may be silly or irrational or stupid, but why would we force them to do something that they don't want to do? So the Bar Tanura, sorry, the Tiferes Yisrael and the Yad Ramah both say that you might have some Hava Mina, that there would be Bal Tashchis involved. Why? Because they're destroying an asset that otherwise has greater value when it's not divided than when it is divided, right? So you might think a parking spot that allows one car to park there has value that a spot that doesn't allow any car to park there has. Do we agree? I think that's quite straightforward. Now, the Yad Ramah says something similar in Yad Aleph and Aleph. Bizman sheshneim rotzim lachlok, this is on page 2. Filu pachas mikan yachloku, v'laka mishum bal tashchis. There's no concern of bal tashchis. Now the question is, why is there no concern of bal tashchis? So we're talking about talis here. Let's take the talis case, because that's the easiest to imagine. So you have a talis that could work for the shitfin, but if you cut it in half, it doesn't serve a purpose to anyone. Right? But if the shutfin want that, that's kosher. So why is there no bal tashchis here? And notice the formulation difference in the Tiferes Yisrael, who says, Kamash mon de inka mishum bal tashchis midelo sagi belav hachi. Which is a slightly different formulation than the Yad Ramah, who just says, Veleka mishum bal tashchis. So what do you think should be said here? Ezra?
I mentioned to Zachariah that I think that when talking about Shabbos, you could consider some forms of kriya to actually be productive and not just destructive acts, like if you're angry and you tear something.
Okay, kriya b'chamaso.
And so if that's the case, then you could maybe understand, you know, radical division of a piece of land, even to the detriment of its use, that be serving a function for the two aggrieved parties. And one aggrieved party just says, you know, this is over, and so much so that I don't even care that I can't use the thing anymore. So maybe there's no bal tashchis in the sense that the division itself actually has a utility.
Yeah. Does everybody get what Ezra's saying? I'll just put in, I think, slightly different terms, but I think congenial to what you're suggesting, that when it comes to bal tashchis, we have to ask whether bal tashchis is about physical things, like the destruction of physical things, versus the destruction of value. Now, maybe in some cases it's one, in some cases it's the other, right? Like maybe cutting down a fruit tree is always going to be considered bal tashchis because you're destroying the thing. Or you could think of it in terms of value, like destroying a fruit tree is baltashkes because you're destroying something that has that's valuable otherwise. Totally distinct from the physical destruction. Yes? The nafkamina is whether you could destroy the physical thing for the purpose of creating more value. The Gemara in Bava Kamma actually talks about this, and it's Me'ula Bedamim discussion. It's worth looking there. I think for our sigya, is what Ezra is saying, is that we're assuming baltashkes is really about the value, not about the physical thing. And that's intuitive to a certain sense, right? In a certain sense, because waste is about waste. Usually we think of waste as like the, you don't waste things, do you? You waste the use that you get out of things. No? We can think about that more. But in our sugya, I think the point is that, yeah, on the face of it, it might seem that the item is being destroyed, the talus is being cut in half. But from the perspective of what I call in the parentheses, the toelas habaylim, right, the utility that the owners are getting out of it, from their subjective satisfaction of their preferences, you're clearly putting this to better use. The haraya, the parties prefer it, right? So in their subjective rankings, each of them prefers this half the item rather than the item intact, even though the item intact may be considered more valuable in the market than it's split in half. But here from their like subjective valuations, what their preferences desire, there's no baltashkes because they personally think they're getting more out of it split. Do you guys see that? I mean, so you could talk about, you could take Ezra's point, cathartic ripping of stuff, right? So like if you get some hana out of destroying something, you ever feel like you just want to like punch the wall through? Anybody ever feel that way? Mm-hmm. I could refer you to social services if you do. But that the idea is that, like, yes, and the Gemara talks about this, ripping items to make a point. I remember when I was in elementary school, it was Hanukkah time, and like the yeshiva I went to was terrible. I want the recording to reflect that I said that. My parents would always say it. I was like, oh, you had a good time? I'm like, no, it was terrible. And like these kids had brought in, I guess, Hanukkah gelt for the Rebbe. It was a thing. Like you brought a check-in from your parents. He just like gave them. And this kid was like totally misbehaving. And the Rebbe yelled at him. He was like, Rebbe, how could you yell at me? I just gave you a check for Hanukkah. It was like in third grade. Rebbe's like, take a look. And he picks up the check and he rips it into shreds. And it was very effective. Like Ada Yom Hazeh, I had that memory like emblazoned in my head. But I think that's a good example, right? Like I think the lesson that was conveyed by that was probably more valuable than the $18 of the check. So I think something like that is what's at work here in the Tiferes Yisrael. Yeah, Zeb.
Wouldn't that sort of undermine the whole issue of all that altogether? Like, obviously, whenever I destroy something, I did it because I want to, and I feel like there was some kind of benefit that I was getting there by. So,
is that true?
Like, maybe the benefit is, I don't know, that's why I'm eating another apple, and I just get rid of it because I just...
You don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. So if we're dealing, if that would be frozen, but we would still consider that baltashkes.
Would you? I think sometimes baltashkes is used in this colloquial sense. But it's not so obvious, meaning like, what, you're supposed to eat it? This is like the achilah gasa point. You're supposed to eat it if you don't want to eat it.
So then I guess what is the case of baltashkes?
I think what we're saying there really is you shouldn't have put yourself in a position. Like that apple could have been put to greater value had you given it to somebody else who needs it more. Something mm-hmm. like that. So there is like some wastefulness.
Like, that's like, is that baltashkes?
It's tricky. Dwaltash is a very tricky sugya. Right. Here it's a bit of a narrower issue, right?
Well, I'm saying it seems to expand itself.
Yeah. I think it's defensible as a general theory of baltashkes. Right. Mu'ula bedamim. And like mu'ula bedamim is this principle in Gemara and Bava Kamma that if you're putting it to better use, then it's not baltashkes. The question is, what's better use? Mm-hmm. Right. So here there's some subjective. Here it's the fact that you now are not subject to the will of your partner in how you use this thing, right? So it sounds like a person prefers it's more valuable for somebody to have something less valuable that's fully under their control than a more valuable thing with split control.
Mm-hmm. And you're saying that wouldn't apply to every case of
I think it depends. I think it depends about what value what it's being put to use for, right? Mm-hmm. So I actually think maybe the difference here in the Tiferes Yisrael and the Yad Ramah, the Yad Ramah says, V'leka mishum bal tashkes. I mean, it sounds like there's no bal tashkes here, right? Because this is what they want. The Tiferes Yisrael makes it sound like there is bal tashkes, but it's overridden because there's no other way to deal with the chalukas hashutfas, right? Lo sagi b'lavachi, like we're backed into a corner. There's no better way to deal with this. So yes, there is waste. Maybe there's some, otherwise it would be an iser if it was gratuitous. But here, let's say it's not derech hashchasa. It's not like gratuitous waste because it's justified by the fact that it's the only way to dissolve the partnership. So one is like a chiddush in baltashkes generally, that if it's put to subjective better use for the party, then that's not baltashkes. That would be the Yad Ramah view. That's Tiferes Yisrael. So that seems to concede this is baltashkes, but for whatever reason, in the interest of not leaving people stuck in bad economic relationships, we're willing to look the other way. Zecharia and then Romy.
Yeah, on the Derek Hashkasa point, maybe have a different approach than Ezra's could be that baltashkes is not about value at all. It's more about, like, this phrase is thrown out by Afronim, Derek Hashkasa a lot.
Yeah.
As it's much more like, theological problem, or like much more of a nicer problem of, you know, being just a destroyer of the Bria,
yeah,
kind of thing. And really,
Sid in Toy Story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? That guy, he's just the Baltashkes guy, right? He's just like,
bad guy.
Well?
It's like, he's like the worst.
Right.
Okay.
It's like, you need like Dostoevsky to get into the mind of.
Right. We're just going to blow up these things for no reason.
Exactly. So, like, yeah. That's really the only problem, and it's never about value, and really, like, I would say it's not
baltashkes
because there's no mice, like, even just simpler.
Right. Yeah, I think that's, you could say that baltashkes is, you know, uniquely if it's destructive or, like, totally gratuitous.
Yeah.
Right? And here it serves the interest of dividing the partnership.
Yeah.
Right? I actually am coming around. I used to think that I could send around this article by Barbara Levine on economic efficiency in Jewish law. Do you read it, Romy?
No, you just talked about not liking it.
Yeah, I used to really not like it. Because he talks about anything that's not efficient as being baltashkes. Right? Like, so if you're paying too much money to heat your house, that's a type of baltashkes. Even though there's no destruction of a commodity. It happens to be, somebody showing him, the Hagos Rabbeinu Peretz on the Smak, I think, says that throwing away money is baltashkes. Like if you're zorek a matbea, even though the matbea, I'm assuming, doesn't have like intrinsic value.
Why not silver?
Well,
I mean, silver.
Well, someone's gonna.
What? It's like precious metal. It's not like a.
Well, you're not destroying it. You're not destroying it. The silver will find its way. There's nothing physical being destroyed, right?
You're not annihilating it. Like, is that the silver?
Well, there's no destruction. You're basically just putting this value out of reach. Right, so to me it sounds like, oh, this thing could have been put to valuable use, and now you're...
Isn't that kind of thing, like throwing some wallet in the ocean? Take that reach.
Is that baltashkes? Is that gzeila?
No, it's a mazik.
What? Yeah, you're mazik the baila. Because you're... That's obvious, right? That's the type of gzeila, whatever you're... Here, the point is your own money. Right? You're not destroying anything. But that's baltashkes, because it's like a waste of the value that could have been driven from it.
Waste of the access.
Yeah, waste of value. Like, you can't extract the value from it anymore. Mm-hmm. So that, I think things like that have softened me to the idea that you could use baltashkes for just the waste of value, which makes then allows you to say, well, if there's some value gained from the destruction, then it's no longer gratuitous, right, or baltashkes. Romy, did you?
Yeah. Wait, doesn't all value then, anytime you destroy any money, like if you destroy money, then you make everyone else's money more valuable?
So this is a difficult. This is like the questions about destroying the crops. Like, you know, this thing about how governments destroy excess crops to protect the prices and things like that. So I think there's a good argument to me that that's kosher.
I was saying that throwing away things, then that actually would increase the value.
It would increase if it does. I don't know. It depends on the market. It depends on how, like, you know. I don't know how, like, the throwing away a coin actually affects the...
Okay. The point I was making was just that it's this distinction.
But the destruction of crops is the example, right? Whereas if there's too much crops, then like there's inflation or it's too easy to, sorry, it makes the price go down and then all the farmers lose money, right?
I should say that basically this distinction between the Tversel and the Yarama, the Tversel ends up being a much stronger statement about property rights, right?
Meaning, yeah, exactly. Mega Chiddush, that we're willing to say that a Chalukas HaShutvos justifies Baal Tashkes.
The Yarama just says, there is no Isser, so it's okay.
Right.
Which is a much weaker.
There is no Baal Tashkes here, given the.
Meaning, so it's a weaker statement about the strength of property rights.
That's right. Unless you say the way Zachari was pushing it, which is. Because there's no other way to do chalukah here, this is no longer considered to be gratuitous. And for it to be Baal Tashkes, it has to be Derech Hashchasa. Right? Okay.
For a guy to go to his own olive press and take like a chainsaw and cut every single thing in half, like a crazy person, would be Baal Tashkes.
Yeah, right. That's like the Sid example.
Yeah.
Right. I think Baal Tashkes is actually a really interesting din. I used to think it was much more narrow, but now, related to this Rabbi Levine piece, I think there's a good case to be made that Baal Tashkes could be much broader to cover a larger set of wrongdoings. But, yeah, we could talk about it. Ned?
Yeah. Ramban and Baal Tashkes seems to, the Gemara already says that if it's for even the Ismachel, for Tzoreh, you can destroy. So clearly there, it's evaluating needs versus sort of the conservation of the product. But I don't think he's speaking in terms of. Usually, I think the Ramban elsewhere writes about the more theological terms about not being Tashkit the Bria. But in this case, I think he says that it's more about after Hashkata during war that's inappropriate. When it relates to not having enough bitachon and Hashem because you're doing it for certain purposes.
Yeah.
So wow. Sort of you can tag on ancillary reasons to explain
Baal Tashkes. Baal is complicated. I don't want to get pulled too deep into it, but there's a very interesting tshuva of the Noda Bihuda, you know, this famous tshuva about all the people who talk about like gun, right?
Yeah. The hunting one.
Right? The hunting one, yeah. So the hunting one, if you know the tshuva of the Noda Bihuda, he talks about whether it's permissible for a Jew who owns these forests, you know, to shoot for sport. And the Noda Bihuda says, so the Shoel asks from the perspective of Baal Tashkes, are you wasting animals by shooting them? Right? And the Noda Bihuda actually says there's no issue of Baal Tashkes because the animals would not have been used for like a different purpose. Like these wild, like it's not like somebody was like needed to shech those animals. So they would just be running around wild, like doing nothing for society anyway. Which Ned, the reason why I say it is because that really pushes back on the destroying the Bria type perspective, right? It's really, there it seems to be about value, right? So if this animal is not going to be used for something purposive, then it's permissible for you to just kill it for sport. Ned Buda says. That to my mind also brings me to the value thing rather than like this, you know, destroying the Bria thing.
Even though it has a potential value?
Even though it has potential value. It's just de facto, he's saying these animals in the forest are out of reach normally, right? All right, so let's. I just want to make one more point on this discussion. The Yadama himself, and we brought this up in the last year, distinguishes between the Baal Tashkes case, where we do force a chalukah, even though it implicates Baal Tashkes, but we won't force a chalukah of Kisvei HaKodesh, Mishim Bizayon Kisvei HaKodesh, he says. He's very explicit about that. Now, what's the Bizayon here? So we're told if it's Bikrach Echad, then there's Bizayon. If it's Bevez Krichos, then it's permissible because there's no Bizayon. So what are Bevez Krichos versus Krach Echad?
Different scrolls.
Well?
Different scrolls.
Well, they have to be, I mean, if they're already totally separate.
Right, and the problem is like taking the knife to the book.
Yeah. So why is it a problem to take a knife to the book, right? You're not. I don't think the issue here is that you're mafkia the kedusha, is the thought. Unless there's some presumption that Kisvei HaKodesh are better when they're together. Like sometimes people are makbid to, you know, if you're doing Haftorah, maybe do it out of a full Tanakh. Is that the presumption maybe here? And so there's some bizayon by splitting it apart. Josh?
I think it's more like that in the same way we say that you shouldn't like put a chamash on the floor and like, you know, you shouldn't be like
take a knife to it.
Huh?
You shouldn't take a knife to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's just like disrespectful to it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So you're saying it's just disrespectful to do something that's destructive in some way, or it's not respectful to Chanko. So I do think it's interesting that we will override Bal Tashvis, right, for Chalukas HaShetvos, but the Bizayon Kisvei HaKodesh said, like, that's not something we're willing to override for the Chalukas HaShetvos. So what do you make of that? Like, why is there that distinction? Is that?
I mean, yeah, well, Auschwitz is really, like you said, it's about sort of value in society, monetary value or any kind of value. And so if you have this other concern of, you know, property for individuals, and that's another, you know, societal value in terms of, yeah, so that would sort of override.
I was just
in the same realm. Yeah. Kodesh is sort of the external idea of, you know, cover the Torah or something like that. You know?
Yeah, I think it's exactly right. I think Zev is right on. So you could say also Daniel? Or
something.
Yeah. I think what's really nice here is that you'll say that Bal Tashchis could be seen as like an internal issue to, you know, the assignment of value between the different interest holders, right? So when they subjectively value the chalukah over keeping it undivided, then, okay, it's an internal question about Dine Mamanis type things, and you could split them. And that's why we solved the Bal Tashchis point. The Kisvei HaKodesh, let's say, which is totally not related to the Bailus question, right? Like, if anything, we think the Kedusha transcends the interests of the parties. There's nothing about our interest in, you know, the autonomy of the individual property holders that would allow us to override Bizayon Kisvei HaKodesh. So I think that's a very nice suggestion from Zev. The Chiddush is that Bal Tashchis could be seen at from this this like Dine Mamanis type perspective. Right?
Why is there no problem with individual property? Meaning, can't there be? Like, what if we own a Chumash, you know, together, and you live in Philly and I live in Teaneck and I want to, you know,
there is a problem, but there's the bizayon to the.
But it's not that there's no individual there's no side of individual property there.
There is, no, for sure. Like they're shutzfin, right? They're shutzfin. But in the Bal Tashchis case, the point is that Bal Tashchis itself is about the waste of the resource. We're saying that it's not wasteful if it achieves the purpose of giving each partner what they want to get out of it, right? So put aside the issue of Kedusha, right? It used to be that I could have gotten full Tanakh learning out of this thing. But since all I care about is, let's say, Eov, then it's totally fine for me to take Eov and you take Shir HaShirim, whatever it is. So that would be from like the Bal Tashchis point of view. Like objectively, a Tanakh is worth more, let's say, than each of these Sfarim separately as a commodity on the market. But the subjective interest of the Shutfin says that that's not Bal Tashchis, or we don't care about Bal Tashchis in that case. As opposed to the Bizayon point, right? Like the Bizayon point is not, that is not, that ish, that halachic concern is not ameliorated. Is that the right word? Whatever, it's not fixed or it's not met by the interest of the individual shutfin. As I'm saying, it's external to the interest of Dine Mamanis. Right? Whereas Bal Tashchis is somehow internal to that consideration of value. Okay? Benji?
But wouldn't splitting it up actually like alleviate Bal Tashchis concerns?
Maybe actually very interesting, let me say a little more. You know, there's a whole business now of you buy old Sifrei Torah and you cut open the Urios, and then you could like fix old Svarim by mixing and matching Urios. Because like I say, if it's Sifrei Torah, there are part of it's worn out, so you could still like cut out like a Uria or something and use it to fix another one. It's an interesting question there, whether that would be like a bizarion kisu akodesh issue, if you think they're just like taking the knife to it. But it's not.
That's less expensive, obviously.
Than what?
Than writing a whole new one.
Yeah, obviously. Okay. Right. Let's move on a little bit, though. I don't want to get stuck here in the first issue. Okay, so then what we spoke about was these different models of ownership. Sorry, the next thing related to the Baal Tashka's point was that when the Gemara is interested in dividing the shutvas and dividing the asset, you know, we encountered all these dinim, right? So let's say you have a chatzer that's held with shutvas, right? So we're told that each person who gets part of the chalukah gets dalet amos at their Pesach. Okay, sound familiar? Yeah? Why do they get dalet amos at their Pesach? So Rashi explains. What did Rashi explain? That Josh tells us.
That when you want to unload your donkey, you need a spot to park your donkey.
That's right. That's right. You need a spot to unload your donkey, right? So it serves the interest of the house to have these dalet amos in front of it. So I just want to point out that this is, as we said last year, this just seems to be a straightforward issue of utility, right? Like we want to make sure that when we divide the asset, the shutvin are getting like the best possible use out of it, right? So we're going to divide it up in a way where we keep four amos in front of each in front of each Pesach. The same is true when you get to the discussion later on, which we have on page 3 to 4, when you have a sadeh, right? What's the minimum shear for dividing a sadeh? Same for a gina, or for a bor mayim, you have a cistern or a well, right? What's the minimum shear that each shutev will have to force a division? So when the Gemara talks about the sadeh case, we're given different shiurim. We're told that it depends on your locale. And what did the locale issue turn on? Like, why are there different shiurim? So what did Tosa say, citing the Rebar Mordechai? Need Bezim et Aleph? Why are there different shiurim in Eretz Yisrael and Bavel, or between these different views in the Gemara? You may see the Rebar Mordechai. Yeah, different quality of lands. Right? Why is the quality of the land relevant?
It's easier or harder to step out.
Okay, but why does that matter? Well, like, what do the Gemara interpret that in terms of?
Efficiency, of harvesting things.
Yeah, or how much labor, yeah, how much... Yeah, how much would you be, how worthwhile is it for you to invest labor and effort into cultivating the land? So we're only going to give you the minimum shear for a sadeh's chaluka is the shear at which somebody's willing to invest the labor costs and the labor effort to cultivate it. Right? Now, what type of consideration is that? Clearly, it's an efficiency type consideration, right? I could give you a tiny parcel of land, but if it's not the type of land that's worthwhile for you to invest labor in to cultivate, then it doesn't give you the right kind of utility. Yes? So to my mind, you see like a certain emphasis in utility, efficiency, in how we're dividing these things. Same, by the way, for the discussion of the boar. So do you see when the Gemara talks about dividing a well or something, a davla? So Rabbi Yehuda Nachman says the shear is beidalu yoma. What's beidalu yoma? So Rashi explains. What's the shear for dividing a bor? From me, it seems like
enough to so that you can hire a person in an efficient way to take 1 day's worth of irrigation.
Yeah, notice Rashi says that this is mishum schar poel, right? To make it efficient for you to just hire a worker who could work for the day and water the field from this thing. So the way we consider the minimum shear for a water system is fixed to the labor costs of hiring a poel to be able to use it, derive value from it in a normal way. Right. So again, this is somewhat obvious, but also somewhat important, that the rules of chalukas hashutvin seem to be grounded in considerations of the efficiency or utility of the various entities. Yeah, I'm interested in this as a background question, like to what extent halacha is interested in economic efficiency in general, right? As a value. Now here, there's not much at stake, right? We're just dividing up property between two shutvin, right? So it's not like we're saying that you could be docha Shabbos for considerations of efficiency or even anything close to that. But it still, I think, is minimally important that we don't just say, well, you're partners, so it gets split, however, right? Like, what rights the halacha is going to assign to the shutvin will depend on whether those rights could be efficiently exercised. You guys think this is trivial or somewhat? Benji?
No, I don't think it's trivial.
Okay, good. Ezra, you can get a comment.
Yeah. The consideration and sensitivity for efficiency when talking about, I guess, the dissolution of the property, is that just a lower bound or is that a fixed rule? And meaning, you know, let's say it's a day's work. Let's say you have something that would divide to 1.5 days. So it's not the most efficient.
Yeah, I don't think there's a hard rule about, you know, even in efficiency, if you get like deep in the economic stuff, there's like Calder-Hicks efficiency and Pareto efficiency. But like, the point is, like, I think there's a lot of different ways that you could think about what's efficient, right? So the answer to that is, I don't think there's like a specific. Take, for example, the Chaznish that I have here. When he talks about this Marki Asrei, anybody see this Chaznish? Zacharia, tell us about the Chaznish.
So he's saying that pretty much these shurim seem kind of like, number one, on one hand, they seem kind of arbitrary and very dependent on different factors per area, and also they seem too general. Across an entire area, every field should be the same shear. So he's saying, yeah, it should just be like, you know, it should just be that we need a shear, we can't have based in a valley every single field in a certain area. So therefore, everybody's given the power to just assert, okay.
In this jurisdiction, this is what's considered efficient,
yeah.
Right? Actually, I just want to make the further point. I think we discussed this shortly in our Pshara discussion. We read the Reb Zalman Nechemiah Goldberg piece, right? Remember that story he told with the wolf and the, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Almost as memorable as the Rebbe ripping up the check. Why can't you just have a b'moshiv a bezdin ulishayar kol sada v'sada? Why not say, in every chalukas ha-shutfas, it goes to court to decide what's the efficient division of the asset. You know, it's like for nonprofits, like the attorney general has to sign off on how the entity is wound down. Josh?
Say it's not worth the amount of money that you're going to get out of the more efficient split.
Exactly. Exactly. You might say that, you know, the transaction, what economists would call the transaction costs, are so high. Like now it becomes crazy expensive to divide each property because you have to litigate on the proper division. One of the reasons why you want fixed rules is to minimize the costs of making decisions, right? Yes? So I just want to point out that one way of thinking about this Chaznish's point is that it's an internal consideration to the efficient division of shutfos. Not only that you could derive efficient use from each part of it, but even that the procedure for dividing shutva shouldn't be too cumbersome. That's it. Why else? Why is it Efshar Lahoshiv Moshe Bezdin El Shara Kol Sada V'Sada? Of course you can, right? It just becomes costly in time and resources to actually do that. Right, so it's not just efficiency at the level of use; it's also efficiency at the level of procedure. Make sense? Okay. One final point on this discussion, the Magid Mishnah, who just generalizes the idea, Mikana Talome Shakol Lefi HaMekomos. Right, whatever, all these rules about Chalukas HaShitvas, it just depends on your locale, and that's why he likes the Rif's formulation. Bahalachos Lokasvel Mashamru Lo Pligi Markiasre Markiasre. That how we define, this gets back to Ezra's point, how we define what's efficient really depend on your jurisdiction. Right? So like here in the United States, like it's just some things are just like we wouldn't waste our time on doing certain things because the opportunity cost is too high, right? You could be doing other things. Right? So what's a worthwhile investment for us is different than in a society where you don't make any money generally. Right. So I got overcharged for $25. Amtrak charged me twice for my parking thing. I'm not going to spend an hour fighting the $25 charge, right? So like, but maybe for somebody like who values their time less, like maybe that's like fighting the $25 charge is worth their time, right? So I think that's partially the point here of the Magid Mishnah, that Markiase, that there's a subjective component here. Okay, let's move into the discussion of Chalukas Achsanya. This is another type of Chaluka of a Shutvus, but here, at least on most interpretations, it's not dividing an asset that was joined into, it's not like you jointly bought a olive press, and now you're trying to figure out how to wind down the partnership. Right? The Achsanya issue, at least on some readings, is about since you guys are common stakeholders in society, so you could view the mavoi, the community, as a type of a shutvas, how do you jointly bear the burden and benefits of some costs? Right? So we're asked, we're told, Achsanya lefi bnei adam is chalakas, or lefi psachim is chalakas. Now, what is the Achsanya? What's the standard reading, Josh?
The king is forcing you to quarter his soldiers.
Yeah, quartering soldiers, right? Like one of the amendments in the Constitution is about quartering soldiers. The fourth?
The third?
Okay, good. So you're asked to quarter soldiers. Very interesting question. How should that burden be divided? Is it per person in your household? Right? So like in accordance with the number of members of your house that you have to quarter soldiers? Or is it based off how many entryways you have? Right? I guess how big your home is, let's say. Right? Both seem like reasonable standards. Yeah? And then we're told also that there's this issue of how do you divide the Zevel Shebechatzer? Right? How do you divide that? So what's the Zevel Shebechatzer? What's the... Yeah, it's like a type of trash waste, right? But then it seems like once the waste sits out for enough time, it has like beneficial usage, like fertilizer or something. Yeah, Josh?
This might not be important, but actually I didn't understand why you would, like if you have a family of 9 people, we're going to say that they're the ones that should house more soldiers. That doesn't make sense to me.
Well, remember when we spoke about taxes, there was a discussion whether it's lefi nefashos or lefi mamon. I think the thought is that, you know, you...
benefit more from society?
Yeah, exactly. So your fair burden is in proportion to the number of people that you have in the world.
How do you know that?
Doesn't make sense?
No, because why would my having... I benefit from society in one way, therefore in another way. Like, clearly the Quran is trying to tie it more closely together than just... People who benefit more from society generally should have more of its burden generally. It's like more people takes more people. Why is that the truth?
No, I mean
here you're just housing soldiers.
Yeah,
it's like a tax.
Here you're just whole housing soldiers, right? So
yeah, but why would I? What if that happens to more people makes you responsible more?
Well, do you agree that 7 adults, 7 different households, each household should house a soldier, right?
Sure.
So if you're a household of 7 people. And one's a household of 1 person, why shouldn't the household of 7 people house 7 soldiers?
Why should they?
because they're getting protected more from the soldiers.
From the soldiers, you're saying?
Yeah.
Or they're right. They're getting the benefit of like what society offers them.
Protection,
even.
By the soldiers, basically.
Yeah, if you want to put them very close together.
Well,
right?
I think they need to. Meaning, I don't think it makes sense otherwise.
Why can't you say in general the Melech offers you services for seven people, so you have to bear the burden of being provided benefits for seven people?
Because the burden that that's being imposed on you has no connection to the benefit that you get. So I actually would say the opposite. I mean, the more people that you have, the less people you should. Meaning, or the bigger your house, the more people you should have to host.
But you're a Lefi Chatzer guy. You're a Lefi Psachim guy.
I assume Psachim is size, yeah.
I assume, no? Like, the number of entrance ways, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, even Lefi Bnei Adam, I would have thought, actually should mean, depending on how few people you have, fewer people, you host more people.
Why would you think that? Because you have more rooms?
But now, yeah, Kobe would have, like, that's not necessarily true. You could have fewer people with fewer rooms.
Right. Where is Kobe? Where's that? He's gone when you quoted the Shita of Lefi Bnei Adam that you don't have. Lefi missing Bnei Adam. Yeah. Yeah, this goes back more to Lefi Nefashas, Lefi Mamon type distribution question. Daniel?
Why are we assuming proportional and not inversely proportional? Like, why do we.
I mean, like, why are we assuming against Romy?
Yeah, no, but I'm saying, why are we assuming that when it says Lefi Bnei Adam, that's referring to how many people are in the house, that's how many people you want to have.
As opposed to inversely?
Yeah, so the more people you have, the fewer people you have to get.
Okay, well, let's say, do you think that Lefi Psachim is inversely proportional?
I mean, not necessarily, no. Why would they both have to be the same?
I would just say Lefi sounds in accordance with. You're right, that as a... Yeah, inversely proportional.
I mean, that's also, I don't see why it has to be. Yeah, honestly.
Right.
I think the mark usually has to be like direct correlation when it says something like this, though.
Yeah, it's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't have such a strong view about why I don't like that, other than the fact that I don't like it. I think the straightforward reading is more that it would be in proportion with. I could look at other Mefarshim to see what they say. I'll pull upon it. It's not. I don't want to get stuck in the. Like the underlying logic of it. I think that really belongs more with the sugya in general, Lefi Nefashas, Lefi Mamon. But I don't know, it sounds intuitive to me. Like, let's just take the Josh's response to Romy, that if you're benefiting from security, if you get seven people worth of benefit from security, then it makes sense that you have to chip in proportion to that.
Same time, though, you also have less space in the house. You have seven bodies that you're going to talk with. If you're one person in the house and you have a bunch of rooms that are empty, it doesn't make sense. Oh yeah, I only have the house with one soldier. It makes sense that, like, no, I have like eight rooms available. Why not just
right.
But someone can contribute more to society by having seven people who work in society.
Yeah.
We can think about it more. Anybody else worked up about this? I didn't think this would be such a... Any of you guys want to quote our soldiers?
Certainly not.
Well... Certainly not.
Can't.
What?
You can't.
What?
Yeah, because not force actually allowed.
Right. Well, you have to just like by rule of law. Like.
So often, but actually came up to me recently with the eviction moratorium that some people said, "Well, listen, you're by probably statistically, you're also forcing landlords to not evict, you know, current soldiers." And therefore, the government's forcing these landlords to quarter soldiers. I don't know if it was successful or not, but it was certainly
That's interesting.
There's not a lot of Third Amendment activists.
Right. I remember when I took this course on constitutional law, the issue was about, does the Third Amendment nowadays, this is like a interpretation question, if you're applying the Third Amendment, would you apply it to landlords or to tenants? Right, because it says, what's the language? No
soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the capital O owner.
Yeah, the owner. Right, so the question is, like, who's the owner, right? So,
I mean, capital O sounds like the Kishabriku.
But I think they capital, they there's always gratuitous capitalizations, right, in Old English. So, like, if you were applying that today, would it apply to the landlord? Like, why would you need his consent? Clearly, like, what the thing means is that, like, the person whose life would be interrupted, right? So it would really be the tenant in the building. Like, there's no real litigation. Where are our poli-sci people? Just you, Romy? Where's Eitan Northman? Where's Eitan?
I'm asking.
I think he's with Kobe.
Yeah. How would you guys apply? Would you apply it to the tenant or to the...
Well, I think it makes sense to say you'd apply it to the tenant until to be that you might also have to apply to the landlord. It makes sense to say...
First and foremost.
Yeah,
right.
But then you have to say, well...
Because clearly it's about not upending someone's life, right?
Yes, but the landlord also had a claim on that for the reason of, like, if I have 10 people in the house, it's going to break the house. You know, like,
right, the shilas is the constitution protecting, like, the privacy of someone's, like, life, or is it protecting your right to make more money off rent? Right?
Well, I think the disruption, and there are multiple ways to disrupt the person to live the life, and also disrupt the person...
I would go back to Zachariah's moratorium point. The moratorium is not disrupting the landlord, it's just saying that he can't evict in the meantime.
He's also not able to collect rent from them, presumably.
What?
He's not able to collect rent.
It'll just be backlogged. I mean, he will still owe him the rent. Or...
Right.
I would imagine it would also apply to, like, summer homes. Like, even if the house is sitting empty, they can't just put soldiers in there.
Think so?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably true.
You think that would be a violation of the Third Amendment?
I don't know.
I would think so. And also, if it matters, soldier is also capitalized.
All right. So let's look at the discussion here in the Ramban. What about the Zevel? How do you apportion the Zevel Shebachatzer? So the Ramban here quotes two deos about what's going on here. And he says, according to one view, the Zevel Shebachatzer is mischalik lefi psachim. So why should you? So you have all this junk sitting in the courtyard. The junk, the waste has economic value. How do you divide it? Well, yeah, meaning by household, let's say, right? Why do you divide it by households? So what does he tell us?
You're the one who made, you're like the people who create the garbage.
Yeah, it just sounds like you basically reverse where the manner in which it was produced, right? You just assume that the waste is... produced by the psachim, or it comes out of the psachim, so you kind of just split it equally by putting it back into the psachim. Right? Yeah, is that...
I feel like it would make more sense to split it in that scenario, because the people are the ones producing waste, not the houses.
I'm not sure, actually. It's an interesting question about what type of... Right, I guess, is it always the more people, or like sometimes like the upkeep properties and stuff produces waste separate from the inhabitants? Right. The Ramban sees some sort of symmetry between like the fact that the waste is produced by homes. But you're right, you might have said...
produced by people.
Well?
You equally say it's produced by people.
Yeah. So what does he mean? So you don't like this argument about derech psachim hishlichu sham v'derech psachim yitlu?
Right.
You're like, this is like... Yeah, it sounds good on the face of it, but so I just hit the rewind or something, and you'll get that. But you're right that if you're right, one house could produce a lot of zevel, and then when you just split it up in accordance with households, you might actually have some substantial redistribution, right? Now the Ramban, yeah, maybe the Ramban's logic is really strange. The derech psachim ishlichu sham derech psachim yitlu. I guess he's saying that each household has an equal claim to it.
I kind of read it like there's like each door, like they just kind of toss the stuff out of their doorway and it only goes like a certain radius. So everyone just takes the stuff that's around their doorway because that was probably just from them. Like there's not some unified dumping ground. It's just like, it just is in the shared space, but it's actually really just associated with any particular doorway.
That's how you read it. Lefi psachim, meaning that...
literally, like, they just threw it out of the door.
So you put it outside your house.
So you can hear garbage
again. Right. That's how you read lefi psachim is chalik. to just get in a defense of Daniel's point then, notice how you're reading Lefi Psachim in a very different way than Lefi Bnei Adam. Because Daniel's worried about this for the inverse proportionality versus...
I agree with Psachim.
You're saying Psachim, I'm saying you're saying that Lefi Psachim is a geographical specification.
Yeah.
Right? The Zevel that's located in front of each home is the property of that home. It's not saying that each home has an equal claim to the... Yeah, that's nice.
That makes sense, actually.
Well?
I think that makes more sense to say based on the size of the house. Why would you define size of the house by the feet stocking? That's a weird way of phrasing it.
Yeah, so it's like...
That's done all the time, like, estimated and stuff. You know, just know the number of windows or the number of doors in the house. You can kind of estimate, like, the general stuff.
Right.
It's like a proxy.
So that's fine. So you're saying that the shutfus works basically, even though the mavoi is like a general shutfus, there are spheres of influence within that shutfus, right? Where let's put this in the framework of the Ramban and the Yushalmi that we saw last year. The Ramban said that each person has a special use right for the area in front of the Dalet Amos in front of their door. Remember this? Not a Kinyan Gamor. So too, on this reading, you would say that each person has a certain zchus to the zevel that's located near their property, even though, strictly speaking, the zevel is not on their land. Yes? Yeah, that's how you want to... Well?
I'm not sure it's totally problematic to say it's like proportional to the number of doorways, because I'm not a composter, but my basic understanding of how it works is sort of you throw out this garbage, and it mixes sort of with the land. As the decomposition mixed with the land. So the fact that you have two doorways, like there's more surface area to spread out garbage over, so even if you have the same amount of garbage, you have less garbage, the fact that it's spread out over two doorways worth of land, there's one doorway worth of land, makes it such that you created more of this fertilizer. I don't know that much about composting, but it wasn't problematic to me when I read the Ramban like that.
But you're reading this as...
You have more land over which you're throwing your garbage, and therefore it does create...
So you guys are reading it that the land contributes to the composting, like the area.
It's more effective, and therefore creates more,
Yeah.
I could be totally wrong about that, but...
All right, we could look more into it. That sounds... But it's also related to this space issue, right? That's how you're thinking.
Right.
Yeah. The Zevel Shel Achsanya, the Ramban here is two deos, so the Ramban reads the Zevel Shel Achsanya as the king's army comes through, right? They camp and they leave all this waste. Okay? How is that waste, which is now valuable, divided between the citizens of the Mavoi, right? So how do you divide it? What's his first deo? This is divided Lefi Rov Bnei Adam Hadarim Bebatim. Why should he divide it that way? Because he thinks the... Josh?
Sounds like when the soldiers left it, they had it in mind to give it to the people, so therefore we're going to try to split it up.
It's a really interesting point. So he thinks that just the underlying intent of the mafgir was to be machne in accordance with each person in the mavoi, right? So I just want to point out that you have this entity called a mavoi. Let's call it a neighborhood. Yes? There are certain goods that are left for the neighborhood. There's an open question, what do we take as the fundamental building blocks of that entity, of that shutfus, the neighborhood, right? Is it the batim or the psachim versus the inhabitants? And you have multiple inhabitants first per each bias. And what we're told here is that for some purposes, we view the shutfus as being composed of batim. For other purposes, we view the shutfus as being composed of individuals. See that? So the thought here is that for redistributing the zevel of the batim, we view the shutfus as being constituted by the batim. For the purposes of redistributing the zevel of the achsanya, we view the shutfus as being constituted by the b'nei hamavoi, right? Which means you could have multiple b'nei adam per each bias. Rami?
I thought the Ramban was cutting through all that, basically saying that the people who stay, that you're given a house, basically intend to leave it for that house. So it's not like
all this stuff gets put in this pot, and then they have to figure out how to divide it, and we divide it based on the people. It's just the people left, and left it to the people that they like, thanks for having me, here's this benefit, and then therefore goes to the people, even if like the rule of dividing things generally in the chatzer has nothing to do with how the people are going to have.
The way I understand the Ramban here is that he thinks the Achsanya camps v'nira shebechatzer himlanin balayla. So I think that's them. They're living in just some common chatzer with many batim. So it's not like they're...
And he's not staying by people.
Correct. When he talks about the zevel of the Achsanya, they just camp literally in the middle of the neighborhood. And then the question is, how do we divide up their leftover goods? And he says, that's Lefi B'nei Adam, not Lefi Batim. So it's not that it goes back to the people that hosted them.
And this is on the assumption that nobody's hosting anyone.
The community's hosting them, they're camping out in the middle.
Meaning that right.
See that?
Meaning not like Rashi is their point.
Correct. Well, it's not Rashi. I don't know if Rashi weighs in on the Zevel of the Achsanya.
No, but I'm saying if you already are assuming that people are staying by specific people.
In some cases, right. It could be that the Zevel Shel Achsanya is talking about a different model of housing. Like they just pitch their tents in the middle of the community. Okay? So I actually think this is an important point about what do you view as the thing that constitutes the Shitfus, right? The household or the Bnei Adam. And the answer is it depends on what type of thing we're discussing. Okay. Josh, you have a quick comment?
Yeah, is it possible that, no, really, either way, we're saying the people are the fundamental thing, which is why when the goods come from outside, we distribute equally among the people. When the goods come from inside, we try to give it back to whoever made the goods, because they're the rightful owners of it, in which case, really, in both cases, it's about the people. And it's just like Zechariah or Shmuel's reading that, like, we give it back to the houses that made it because they're the ones that deserve it.
Yeah. If you go with Zechariah and Shmuel's reading, I think it's a little closer to what you're saying. Even then, I would push back and say that's just the principle of distribution. Like, once the Zevel is composting in the common lot, it belongs to the shitfus of the mavoi of the chatzer. Now we're just figuring out what's a fair distribution of dividing it between those entities. Not that like they never lost their ownership or something like that. So it is a chalukas ha-shitfus in this broad sense. Okay? Good? Okay. So now I want to go a little deeper conceptually into this question of... what is the halachic mechanism for forcing a chalukah or not forcing a chalukah between these different shitfin? Right, we've seen two different types of models so far. There's the chalukah of the assets in the chatzer. There's the chalukah of the beis abad type thing. But what's the underlying halachic mechanism for forcing or not forcing a chalukah between shitfin? So we have a few comments of the Rishonim. We have two tshuvas of the Rashba here. Aleph, Tuf Tuf, Kuf Nun Vav, and Bez, Kuf Mem Aleph from the Chivas of Rashbas. And he weighs in on this question of if you have something that's Ein Bo Kedei Chaluka, so something is not splittable on its own, it's not divisible, in principle, does any Shittuf have the right to force his partner to divide the asset? Well,
yes.
He thinks yes, right? Mikra Adin, if you and I jointly own a car, I have the halachic power to force you to cut it in half. Yes? But if, let's say, what?
The car.
Yeah, Talos.
Well, don't we say that if it can't be, then...
Well, the Mishnah just says as a matter of halachic doctrine, you can. Here we're peering inside and saying, is that halachic doctrine... Me'ikar Adin, or is that some artificial takana? Right? The Ritva wants to say that when the Mishnah says you can't, that's the product of an artificial takana overriding the Me'ikar Adin principle. Okay? So he says, V'nirli, time of the milsim, Mishum the Dina de Gudo Agud, V'dina de Chaluka, L'zmanim Yiduim, Takantahi, De'ilu Midina, Me'ikar Adin, Havelan lemeimar dafilu chatzar de les bashir chaluka ilu rotzazel litol chelko. I added an itol. It's clear from the other tshuva. Ela mishum asisa yasher ba'atov asisa tova yasher iefshar. V'lefikach tiknu lahem dina de gedavagur dina de chaluka zmanim kedei shelo yafsidu zel zechelkam. Better formulation in Beis Kuf Mem Aleph. Here you have that word explicitly. Time of the milsa mishum dina de good all good v'dina de chalukah zmanim yidum takantahi de ilu midina havel on the meimar da filu chatzer de les beishir chalukah ilu rotsa ze litol chelko yitol. What do you make of that proposition? So we both co-own a car. If we divide the shitfus, we split it in half. And we could force each other to do that, right? Even if somebody doesn't consent, Josh.
It's like we said before, that the bias of the yachid is more fundamental.
No? Yeah, right. It seems to be saying that, look, it's almost like it sounds a little crude. See if I have my marker. It sounds a little crude, but when we think of a shutfus, the idea here seems to be that Reuven has 50% ownership. Shimon has 50% ownership, right? So if they dissolve it, that means they each get 50% of the thing, right? So to own 50% of what? Of the physical chayfetz, right? And so when you divide the shitfus, they're each entitled to 50% of the chayfetz. Make sense? And that's Meyikra Adin. But that's crazy, right? That'll lead to enormous hefsid. We're worried about Yafsidu Zelza. If we cut the car in half, suddenly we took an asset that's worth, let's say, $40,000, and we made it worth, I don't know, $5,000. Seems like a very silly conclusion, right? So here, the Takana of Asisa Yashir Batov steps in and says, we have to find an alternative remedy. Yes? When he says takanta, does that sound like a takana drabanan? I assume so, right? It's a fix. Literally, it's a fix. What's the halachic mechanism for the fix? We're told asisa v'yashar v'atov. Like, this would just lead to some absurd, irrational halachic conclusion. So we remedy it with asisa v'yashar v'atov. We have good or good. We remedy it with splitting time usage. But we have a takana. Yes? It acknowledges that there is this really strange inefficiency at the heart of the halacha's rules of shutfos. Right? It's like a really bad setup. But you say, okay, that's fine. If formally this is what shutfos is, each of us own 50%, then the remedy when we want to split it is to take 50% of the chayfetz. That's terrible for everyone. So we have a takana to fix the meikra adin rule. Okay? Anybody with me on that model? That's clearly the Rashba's view. If you look at the Rush seems to have a slightly different perspective. So here's in our Parak Simon Lamed Zayin, Bo Basra. Here he's talking about the din of having arba amos for each shutaf when you're splitting a chatzer. And he says, the taima de lo pligi b'chol ani ad she yehebo kishir hamefurish b'mishna seinu. So everybody agrees that when there's ebo kedei chaluka, you don't split it. Why? Volunteer to Daniel.
Right, that's the utility issue, right? You have to utilize
half you would get. So if you don't, then you claim that, because everyone has to say that he wants to be able to use, then you need to be able to say, I want to use all of them.
Yeah, so he's saying, look, everybody agrees that you, if there's no shear of Dalet Amos, you can't force a chaluka. Why? Lefi she'ein roi lekol echad l'shtamesh b'chelko hamagio. What does that mean?
That he's not going to use the 50% that comes to him.
Yeah. So what do you take that to mean? Now let me say this. I read this rush.
I'm just going to say that this maker, it's a maker of inargument, right? Against the Rashba, that there's no power to force a haluka, even maker adin, when it's able to get a haluka. Right, so like there's, even on the pure halachic rules, you can't force the car to be split in half. Why not? Daniel, so tell us why not.
Because you're not able to use half the car.
You're not able to use half the car.
So say a little more, flesh out that argument for us.
As in order for you to be able to sit, for one to be able to force the split of an item, right, with someone else, right, for shukras, you have to make sure that each party is still able to still use.
Why do you have to make sure of that?
Because now you're causing them to lose out in the function they were able to have before.
You cause them to lose out. What does that mean, you're causing them to lose out?
As in now they don't have an available function that they have. Like, that's when they had something.
Why is it important to make sure that they have the available function?
Well, now you're losing, making them lose out on an opportunity they have to do something that now they can't do. Like, before, if I had a car that I wanted to share with you, I was able to drive into the city. Now that we split the car, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah. So what have we not given back to you?
The function that I had.
Right. So what does that suggest to you?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing.
It might be a certain nest. Like, yeah, let's put it slightly in terms of property formulation.
You're making them lose property, I guess.
Yeah. Which suggests, as a counter to this model here, that... I think these words are Ulish Shamish point, which is very important. That it's wrong to think of a shutfus as, hey, I own half of the hefet, you own half of the hefet. Right? As if it's just like a question. When we look at the molecules of this, let's say, desk that we jointly own, half the molecules have my stamp on them and half the molecules have your stamp on them. Right? When we're talking about ownership, right, part of that interest is the use right. Correct? Zchus Hishtamshus. Are we agreed on that? That's very intuitive. So when we each have a 50% equity or a 50% ownership stake in the car, it's not that like half of the aluminum and wires belong to me and half of them belong to you. Rather, there are certain legal rights, right, that each of us has. One of them is that I have a 50% right to use this vehicle, correct? That use right would be totally annihilated when you force a chalukah, correct? So it's not like the way the Rashba presents it in this crude way where, you could force a chalukah of the shutfus maker in because now I'm just giving you what's yours, half the car. No, like when we force a chalukah, you're losing what was yours, right? You're losing 100% of the use right that you used to have, right? So it's not like we're the chalukah here just gets us back to the primordial underlying true ownership interest that each person has. A chalukah destroys the true ownership interest that you have as a shittav. You see that?
So the nice thing about the way I understand this Rush's view is that it's true that Reuven and Shimon are 50% owners, right? But you can't reduce 50% ownership to being 50% of the chayfes. It's true, you're 50% bias. But we have to flesh out, what does it mean to be a 50% violent? Well, part of that is that you have a zechus hishtamshus. You have a use right in 100% of a kefetz at certain times. At TX, let's say, at some time, right? That's part of your 50% shitvas. And that's not something that your partner could force you to lose. Okay? So the main point I want to make here is that the Rashba's model, I think, trades on a spurious presentation or some intuitive but yet spurious upon analysis modeling of what shutfus looks like. That if you're a 50% bialim, that means that half the thing is yours. And the point of the rush is that by emphasizing this chus hishtamshus point, is that when you think of the attributes of ownership that a shutfus has, none of that is reducible to being an owner of 50% of the thing. You could put it in slightly different language and say you're just confusing the idea of being an owner of 50% of the chetas with the idea of being a 50% owner of the chetas. You see how those are very different? I think the Rashba is saying if you're a shittah, you know, or maybe he thinks that B implies A, right? As a shittah, if you're a 50% owner of the chayfats, so you're an owner of 50% of the chayfats. Right? Whereas the Rashba is saying that's clearly not true. As a 50% owner, you have certain types of zechuyos that an owner of 50% of the chefetz doesn't have. Do you see that? Okay, I'll take some comments. Zacharia, starting with you.
You mentioned last year that...
I don't want to be medayik in the language just to support my reading of the Rosh. Notice he says, L'fi she'ein roi l'chalachar l'hishtamesh b'chelko hamagio. Right, like you're not able to use like your share that is belongs to you, right? Lefika kol echad yomar ani rotzeh ani rotzeh lehishtamesh bekulo. Right, I have this right to use all of it. Right. Yeah. So go ahead, Zacharia.
I think last we looked at like forget which ones.
I'm just gonna say one more thing. Sorry. He says, "Aval im kol echad makir chelko, ve'ein lo reshus lehishtamish b'shel chaveru cholkin, afilu pachas mishir hamefurish mishna seinu." If it's a type of shutzvus where the physical parts are divvied up, we're like, well, you know, this part of the thing is mine, this part of the thing is yours, then you could force a chalukah, right? So it's like if the, let's say, the Sefer Torah was made up by Yerios that I wrote and Yerios that you wrote, so like we know the location of like each of those are shares, then yeah, you could divide it up because you start with like ownership of 50% of the chetas. But that's a unique type of shutfus. Your standard shutfus is not constituted in a way where kol echad is makir bechelko. Right? Okay, sorry.
Yeah, I think it was some philosophy of ownership last year, rather like one perspective being just kind of total dominion over the object versus kind of more of a bundle of rights perspective.
Yeah.
I wonder if you could kind of project that onto this.
1000%, yeah. It's exactly what I mean by
the push. I think the rush is not intuitive if you haven't heard of the other one. I think you're like, listen, like, who owns the object? You just say the rush. Like, who owns it?
Right.
Right? But I think you take perspective, like, there has to be an ownership of the object. There's one kind of relationship to an object of ownership, and so it must be the only way to implement the 50-50 is just in quantity.
Exactly. Yeah, I think
that's the round.
Correct.
You take
that's like the round.
Listen, ownership. Who owns it? Well, there's parts of that. And you can break that down by part.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's kind of saying is like there are different ways of thinking about what it means to own something. And there's this intuitive sense where like things are just owned by people. Like where you talk about things as the locus of ownership, like this desk is mine, this desk is yours. And if it's both of ours, then there's a sense in which like we both own parts of this. Right? Like
Blackstone.
Yeah, the Blackstone view, right? Whereas this other view of ownership is like, no, they're just different types of rights and powers that people have in things could be specified in a lot of different ways. Like we saw, like Josh mentioned, Cheskas Tashmishin, right? A right to use somebody's things without owning the chepetz is a model. Similar here, a shutfus means that certain rights and powers belong to one shutf, certain rights and powers belong to the other shutf. Doesn't correspond to some like spreading out of molecules in the thing at all. And then, of course, the Russian view becomes much more intuitive, right? What a shutfus means is that there, I have powers to use it in some senses, and you have powers to use it in some sense, and splitting the thing in half doesn't protect anybody's interest in the thing. Correct? Did I say that? Great. Good. Great points, Kai.
Like, what would the Rush say to Shlomo Melech?
The Rush is on Shlomo Melech's side, right? I mean, it's silly.
Right, I mean, like, I guess it's a bad example. I don't know. It's like...
Like, what was Shlomo, what was the Havamina you're saying?
Well, it wasn't really intending on killing the baby, I think.
Well, it had to be that the Zonos took Shlomo seriously.
I think it's a different question about what was Shlomo doing there, right? You don't have to say that the point of Shlomo was to, like a chaluka shava b'shava, but the point is like now you'll be even because both babies will be dead, right? I mean, it's not obvious that Shlomo was saying here's the just resolution to split the thing in half because they weren't arguing there was shitfin in the child, right? The whole thing was a stratagem, right? But I'm saying the stratagem could have been like...
Like some close.
What?
Like that removal of a
socket. Right.
He'd sell it. He'd sell it then.
Right. We'll have to my eye in more carefully in the second there. Yeah. Rami?
I was going to ask to what extent you think that for the Rush that the usage right really is what ownership is entirely. But if you want to go the bundle of rights... Route,
yeah, you don't have enforcement to that.
Right. But then how do you kind of fit that with this sugya in terms of which things impede your ability to force a haluka? Meaning, maybe we don't care about your discuss, we only care about the physical. I don't remember all the list of the different or potential
right.
bundles.
Which things are we protecting?
But, right.
Yeah. Good point. But I'll just say that right now I have a much more narrower interest, which is I don't know the jointly necessary and sufficient interests of the halacha in dividing the thing that you have joint ownership in. We saw efficiency as one consideration, right? But even as Ezra points out, there are different types of utilities. Here, I think the Rush, I'm just using the Rush as the alternative to the Rashba's model. I think the Rashba's model is so crude, right? Why would you think that Maker Adin, if you're a shittah, then you have a right to 50% of the physical object. So the Rashba has this intuitive notion, like what does it mean to own a thing? It's like you own, when you own all of a thing, you own all the particles. When you own half a thing, when you own an entire thing, you own 100% of the particles. When you're a 50% owner, you own 50% of the particles. That's the Rashba's thinking. And there's something intuitive about that, right?
I think the motivator idea
is
to walk away with something if you own something.
Well, you are walking away. Good. Well, it is a way of walking away with something. Chaluka lizmanim, right? We split off days of usage with it. It's a way of walking away with something. That's the point. There are these models. The Rashba says those come in as a takana. We should all lose out. So the Rashba point is saying, no, those things have to be meikra din remedies. Because there's no presumption that a 50% owner should walk away at 50% of the asset, of the physical thing.
My answer is just to say that I'm less interested in saying like what the rush is ultimate conception is as opposed to exposing the fallacy and the like the Rashba type reasoning.
Unless the Rashba is just trying to protect all the bundles of meaning as many.
But the Rashba is not. By definition, that's the whole point of the Hishtamshus thing. That's why I think it's so good about this rush. He's saying, the time of the Lo Palgi B'Cholhani. The reason why we don't split all these things, Sheinbo K'dei Chalukah. I misread that before. Adshi Hebo Kishir, the first Mishnah Sinai, Lefisha, Ein Ro'i L'Chol Echad L'Hishtamesh B'Chelko Hamagiyo. You're depriving the owner, the 50% owner, from getting the full use rights of his ownership interest. Correct? And I think as Zakaria points out, that's already saying, like, don't think of it of ownership of physical object. Ownership partially contains privileges of use. That's totally annihilated when you split a physical object in half. Right? It's very simple, but I think very powerful. Everybody good with this? Ned, sounds good to you? Yeah? Good. Now there is... Okay, let me say one more thing here. I want to look at the Kiryas Sefer for a second. Kiryas Sefer is the Mabit. He says a lot of good things in general in the Rambam. And he says, Masha Yeshbo Din Chaluka Kofen HaShutvin Zeze Lachlok. And here's the important line. V'she'ein bo din chaluka, when you can't divide it, yesh bo din good o'i good, odira lizmanim, oschiras lacherim. Three remedies, right? You could either buy me out, buy you out, or you could rent it out to a third party and split the proceeds, or you could alternate times of use. Right? And he says, v'nir d'chol zehu min haTorah. So I think that's explicitly against the Rashba. He's saying this is a me'ikra din remedy, because... what's the right remedy for being a 50% owner? Well, the remedy for 50% owner, the thing that best protects your ownership interest, is either splitting time use, buyouts, or leasing it to a third party where you get the value of your 50% ownership interest. That those are all better meikra din than cutting the physical object in half. I think that's very consistent with this other way of looking at ownership. Yeah, everybody agree? Good. I was going to say, let me make one last point here. And that is, I think this is true. I'm not totally sure if it's true. I think another position that falls out of the rush type perspective and the mabit type perspective here in Kiryas Sefer is that it's wrong to think of a shutfus as just some aggregation of individual bialioses. Right? It's not that there's like, oh, at the most fundamental level, there's bialios of a yachid, right, where you own all the particles, and then you aggregate two owners, so you each own 50% of the particles. I think the point is that there are aspects of a shutfus that are just irreducible to individual stakes that are more fundamental to it. Right? When you have a shutfus, actually, it depends on the allocation of rights, but the shutfus is what's fundamental. Right? That there's the thing is jointly owned by both of you. And then, of course, there is no way to divide that in half between the people to preserve the ownership interests of each. See, on the Rashba's model, the whole point is, like, of course you could divide, maker then you could always divide a shitfus, because that's how you get back to the status quo ante of like the most fundamental type of ownership. On the Mabit view, on the rush model, that's not true. The shitfus, the combined ownership, is the most fundamental thing there is. There's actually no clean way of getting back to the to splitting that into bilos of a yachid. So Allah steps in with other remedies that are imperfect, they're not as good. Good o'al good, chalukal ismanim. Right? Those are ways of trying to preserve the interest, the shutfus, like what the shutfus afforded the individual bialim. Everybody see that?
But the interest stake of the yechidim is parasitic upon the more fundamental thing that is the shutfas. Is that your problem?
Yeah. You're saying that the rush, it sounded like before you were saying the rush like makes more sense than the rush book.
Yeah.
It sounds like there's, to me, it seems like there's just two possibilities for what, how it can be formulated.
Yeah, you could view it as, you could say there are two ways of formulating it. I think you just have to, the question is what's motivating the Rashba. If the Rashba is motivated by A, that's fine. Like if he's saying, look, this is what Bailus is ownership of Chafatzim, and then a Shutfus is 50% of the Chafetz, that's all kosher. If the Rashba is starting with this is what Shutfus is, and then they just kind of slip into saying, oh, therefore, right? If you're a Shutfus, then it's problematic. So I agree. It depends on what his like theoretical commitments are.
Like if you're saying this is the only way it can be, then
right. If it's just because you think that, oh, like intuitively, if you're a 50% Bailim, then you're a Bailim on 50%, that's the reasoning is very right. But you're right. If he thinks like no, like the essence of Bailus and Halacha is ownership over particles, then yeah, it's totally fine. Okay, good. Great, so we'll stop here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Yachid against the Tzibor and Meitzar Sheikh Zigubar Rabim and stuff like that. And then Kofen Amidah Stone.